Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
Wash Up Walk On Fans, episode 117. As you can tell by the title, very special guest Mark Morehouse joins the episode, and we flipped the script a little bit. He asks us questions while we were playing. We ask him questions now. It's a little bit of a back and forth. It's super entertaining, and we had a great conversation. Sit back, relax, and you know what it is. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk Ons fans. It's episode 117 of the podcast. And Kluver keeps trying to insist that we are part of the media now. And I've told him on a couple occasions that I am clearly not. And I wanted to bring on a member of the media who is really somebody with reporting talents and, you know, a media background, not just a weird specialist that talks too much. So I think we're going to have a pretty fun episode, and I think he's going to have some good questions for us and vice versa. It's going to be a good conversation, so I want to thank you for coming on, Mark, and welcome you to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. I see three guys who walked on and made something out of nothing, made something out of their one chance to be somebody, and you guys walked away. I think all three of you guys walked away with heads held high.
And then emphasis we held on the nothing part.
Yeah, and then we held on to whatever we had with this podcast.
I think it shows football has a role. I mean, if you can fill one little niche, I mean, fullback at Iowa, you know what you're doing, right? You're going to smash a linebacker. Kevin, I think your story is amazing. I mean, the special teams kind of guy, that's not an easy job to accept because, you know, you have dreams of being an All-American linebacker. But, you know, you see those jobs come to you and you accept them and you play your role. And those roles are really important. Obviously, long snapper. I mean, that's the quietest, most important quiet job there is in football.
Yeah, well, Mark, there you go. You made us feel great again. Hey, guys, we're important.
It just amazes me covering Iowa football all these years, seeing how the guys, you know, you get scholarship guys who, you know, fade. You get scholarship guys who rise. But the walk-on guys who rise and just find their spots, it's, you know, Kirk always talks about good stories. Those are always really fun to tell.
And we got to thank you for telling those stories because it's –
because otherwise nobody would.
No one else would.
I think what kind of opened my eyes is Tyler's mom DM'd me a few times when Tyler was coming up, and we talked about long snapper. It kind of opened my eyes, like, you know what? That should be a scholarship position. And I started kind of hitting at it, and it happened. So
anybody who touches the football should have a scholarship. 100%. The football is extremely important in a game of football. So if you touch it, you should have a scholarship.
That's actually a really interesting take that I've never thought of in that sense. I did always used to tell people, hey, every time I'm in the game, I got the ball in my hands. we were, I guess, in three very interesting roles. Kevin's really the champ of the three of us, because he just to be a four. To be a four-phase special teams guy is just the most grindiest way to work your way through a college football program.
And it's kind of a dream. Like, Kevin got to do something that I wished I could have done. Like, I would have loved to have had the capabilities to play on all four phases. I just wasn't built like that as a player. He was a better all-around player than me, so he got to play more. That's just kind of like,
well, I'm not going to say I mean, I love my role. It was fun being a four-phase guy. I won't say it's the grindiest way to do it, because I'd much prefer my role to Drake's of bashing my head into Aaron Menz on a beach 20 times of practice. That definitely sounds like a tougher grind than just having to show out on special teams.
And that's why I am the way I am, and you are the way you are.
Yeah,
and that is probably has something to do with it. Also, for the people watching on video, thank you for cleaning your face, dude.
You're welcome.
You actually look like a human being again.
Yes.
Yeah, Drake's looking presentable again. But anyway, Mark, this is going to be interesting. We've literally reversed the roles. So, you know, for 4 or 5 years, well, not all 5 years, we're not Josie Jewell. for a couple years, you and the other reporters and media members were semi-interested in occasionally what happened. You know, every once in a while, someone drops a body bags quote, or, a polecat play happens, and we get our shot in the spotlight. But now we have you on the mic on the other end, and I think it's a really interesting opportunity for us I don't know if there's really ever been something like this that's happened at the level that, you know, we're not crazy big, but we have a decent following in the state of Iowa. And I think a lot of our followers and kind of fans of you, I mean, you have obviously with the platform that you've built, we have a decent amount of the Iowa fan base that see the stuff that we put out. So I kind of want to start with that body bags quote.
Thank you, Mark, for answering the phone right away when I hit you up.
Yeah. When Drake came back, I was like, I kind of knew. And I was glad I didn't tweet anything out on that. So when a guy says something like that, I usually – you know, I give it some time and just want to make sure that they take responsibility for what they said. And
well, let's stop right there. Drake doesn't do well at that.
But he did. He sprinted back into the building and said, "Guys, use that." So you know, you hear that, you respect it totally, and you knew in the. I bet at Drake, it felt good saying it. But then you caught yourself and you're like, you know what, you can't say that.
So here's the funny thing, Mark. I'll tell you the story from my perspective and you'll laugh. So I give the interview. And when I was giving those interviews, first of all, I'm a huge stand-up comedy guy. I know I'm not that funny, but I like to try and be funny. So in those interviews, I always tried to make y'all laugh in some way, whether it was just in like a really bland way, just kind of being, you know, whatever. But I try to make y'all laugh. And then, so I went home. And I didn't even know I said it. And I went home and Ike and Bo were sitting on the couch playing video games. And I said, they asked me what I was doing. I said, media. I was like, I think I actually just had a pretty good interview. I think I just gave him some funny stuff. And Ike goes, oh God, what did you say? And Bo looks at me. He's like, what did you say, you asshole? And I'm like, I don't know. I think I was just funny. So they're like, well, you know, it's going to be on Twitter. So look up your name. Boom. Looked it up. Body bags, body bags, body bags. I'm like, oh no. So how can I get this like damage control? So I'm like, damn, I'm really going to get in trouble for this for sure. Like I'm screwed. So I tweeted you direct message. I'm like, how do I go about this? And you're like, well, I didn't do anything. I knew that you were probably going to regret saying that. I'm like, thank you for that, first of all. But I just had to, I had to find out through Twitter, because my roommates called me out without even knowing it. They just knew my personality. And it was a pretty downhill situation.
Ike has got a lot. You know what? He's a really smart guy, and he's got a lot of guile to him. And those guys, Ike and Boone, two really great guys, two straightforward guys. And I know that they were good referees of what you should say and what you shouldn't say. Mm-hmm.
Ike has a great head on his shoulders. He's especially now. He's actually a dad now, so he's he was always kind of voice of reason when things got out of hand.
But I just got to give a shout out to you, Mark, because that is a hot quote. And media these days thrives on a hot quote. So good for you for being an awesome human being and not putting that out there. On
also, shout out to Chad.
I don't want to get the fullbacks in trouble. I mean, the fullbacks don't come out to talk very often. I want to keep them coming, so you don't want to get them in trouble.
Right. I mean, you could have missed out on a whole lot of Brady Ross content then.
I also got to give a shout out to your colleague, Chad Leistikow, because his Twitter was hot with that tweet and he took it down even though it was blowing up. So that was a good move by him. People might have already had the screenshot, but, you know, at least he saved it a little bit.
I would say that most of the media that covers Iowa really aren't out for stuff like that. I mean, you want to tell a good, interesting story. You want to get insight on what the team is doing, the parts, the units that are rising in the team, the, say, defense shutout. Well, you're going to write about the defense the next week. Not a lot of us are in for, like, oh, yeah, he said this or got you this. I don't know. Maybe you guys would argue with that point. I don't know. But generally, I don't think any of us are really out for that.
Well, I only gave, like, one or two interviews my entire career, so I can't really speak to that.
I would say, I guess it's – I would agree. I think we've said it multiple times on here that the Iowa media is – it's really good
guys.
They're really good guys. I mean, I don't know all of you personally, and obviously, you know, get the randoms in there that maybe come, you know, here and there. But I think it kind of coincides with the fact that you guys as a media group know, especially at this point, the kind of program that Iowa runs. And like, You just kind of know that, like, that you're not going to get anything like that out of them anyway. So it's like, you know, it's just so clean.
Unless it's Drake, but yeah.
Unless it's Drake, yeah. I'm actually interested to know, like, from your point of view, in today's world, like Drake said, like or maybe Kevin mentioned it, everyone just wants that hot story, that clickbait title. You know, how do you manage that as someone who that's literally your job, while still like keeping the integrity of the story or something like that? Like, cause it would be very easy. I mean, I do it with our podcast episodes. Like if we talk about something that's super, you know, we have one super funny story in the podcast, I'll name the podcast episode after that one story. But then, like, you know,
that way we sucker them for the whole hour when we have 5 minutes of good content.
Right. You know, we got 50 other minutes of stuff that like wasn't relative to that story at all. But, you know, how do you balance that?
Yeah, I think there's always a hot topic with the team. I mean, say, after Purdue in 2018, I think the one where Purdue held every play in the secondary when Noah Fant was dry humped on that 2-point conversion in the end zone. That game, Kirk comes out. He talks about the refs. Riley Moss had a tough game. And you have to write about that part of it. You have to write about the hard part of it. And sometimes that in and of itself is kind of, I don't want to say racy or controversial, but the result sometimes is not what you want. And so sometimes the result is the pain in the ass thing to talk about. And you just kind of, I think that Iowa does a pretty good job getting you guys ready to talk about the failure, the defeat, and then just moving on. I mean, I don't think post game after a loss should last more than 10 minutes, more than 20 minutes, you know, guys coming in and out, because you're not going to get a lot of insight and it's going to be a pain in the ass. And you're only going to say something stupid. You know, if you're out there long enough, you're going to say something that's going to get you in trouble or it's going to be just stupid. So I balancing that, you want to be interesting, but you know, to me, for my post to be interesting, well, I have to make them interesting. I don't leave that with all you guys. I mean, you guys add to it. You guys aren't, I don't want to make you guys like stay in a post game, the most interesting thing. But when you go out to like, say, write a story about Wirfs or write a story about AJ or Matt Nelson or something like that, well, you want to spend time, you want to get to know them, and you want to give them a stage to say, you know, their thoughts and things too. So to me, it's always been sort of, I want to give you guys a microphone, but I don't want you guys to say body bags, but you know, you got to say what's in your heart sometimes too.
Yeah.
As long as a guy walks away and he feels like he was heard and he was, didn't feel like he was ripped off, you know, just used, I'm good with that. And I think most of the time that's how Iowa players feel when they come out and talk on Tuesdays.
Yeah. Awesome. Have you, you know, again, with the body bags comment, in your time as a reporter, have you ever come across another instance like that where you're like, wow, that's like, immediately, you know, it's gold.
Like, you know, KF probably doesn't want that out there,
though. Yeah. I'm going to go right to Fred Barr, 2002 Iowa State, before Iowa State week. This is Iowa State week, 2002. Hawkeyes, I think, were probably favored. Iowa State was not very good. Iowa was, I think, 2-0 or 3-0, whatever it was, going into Iowa State that year. Fred Barr, linebacker from Florida, he was very outspoken. He was kind of like Drake, but times 10.
Wow.
Wow.
Fred came out and said, I hate Iowa State. I hate him. And he just kept saying how much he hated Iowa State, kept saying it. And Fred was the only one who, I think, Kirk was like, okay, let's keep Fred away Iowa State week. But other than that, kind of let him say what he's going to say. Not too many guys got that, but Fred came out and said, hated Iowa State. Julian Vanderbilt did it in a different way. You know, I don't know if you guys met Julian.
So we never played with him, but I follow him on Twitter, and yeah. He's hilarious on Twitter.
He's a great follow on Twitter.
You know, he's come back for a few networking events.
Yeah,
I think he minored in Japanese. Really, really super smart guy. Basically said he hated Iowa State in a very different way, and then all of a sudden redshirt freshmen weren't able to talk to us for about a year. So,
yeah.
You can't lead if I think Kirk is pretty good after 22 years of knowing when, you know, we push a guy off a plank like that. And that's never, in my mind, that's never kind of the goal, but sometimes it just comes out organically, and like the body bag saying, you got to cut the guy some break. You got to cut guys slack, but hey, sometimes you guys want to drop the mic too, right?
I mean, I didn't regret saying it at all. The only reason that I had to go back and do it is because I knew that KF did not want that out there. And I had respect for the program and the coaches and things like that. I wanted to say it because it was funny and I laughed hard as hell, but I had to go back and do damage control.
And this is what we have to deal with now, because he doesn't have the same respect for our podcast as he has for the program. So now he says stuff without any remorse and ever taking it back at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say, you know what, the Ohio State guys probably would have read that and laughed too. I mean, it's more like trying to please the coaches and maybe some of the readers who are maybe a little thin skinned, but I bet the Ohio State guys would have read that and go, yep, body bagged pretty much.
I mean, it was no doubt.
I wouldn't have sat well with me, but
yeah, it was no doubt. I mean, that's what we did. I can picture Drake, because after that game, I can just see Drake walking out and just, shoulders just puffed and just scored a touchdown, like, you know. And it's like, as the quote was almost, I think it was, they came into Kinnick as the third ranked team in the country, and they left in body bags. And I can see you saying that 300%.
Like, you got to say something like that in like a Rambo outfit though.
Yeah.
Not like sweats after practice. You got to be Rambo with two machine guns, body bags.
And that's Drake. That was Drake back then. Not anymore. Drake's not what Drake used to be.
Shots fired.
Nah, he's right though. It was time to calm down. Like, if I didn't have people that I could actually headhunt and try and kill on a regular basis, I can't just go around being a caged lion. Like, you can't live life like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. Everyone's involved.
Drake, do you like that 2-platoon fullback thing? I think it's a really smart thing you guys did. It saves you guys some mileage. And you guys are – people don't realize how much practice energy comes from you guys. comes from the fullbacks.
So it's it's amazing during spring ball and camp because the amount of inside run and just head bashing you would do as a single fullback through all the periods would just be nauseating. Like, we'd all be completely brain dead. So that's great. In games, I got to play a few games, just basically purely me, because Brady had a broken wrist. I played like four games where he barely got to see the field because Brian was worried about him having the club on his hand. And it was really fun in games because your adrenaline just super high and everything. But there's so many times during the year where you need the buddy that you can't be selfish on game day, because like, being the solo dude like Wiseman was back in the day, him having to take fullback and running back reps, I heard that was probably just miserable.
Yeah. And Kevin, what's that like in practice, those reps?
Kind of like Drake said, it takes a toll on you. So I would have to say my junior year was when I first moved to linebacker, because we were just losing linebackers left and right. So, you know, I went from being like a third string safety, you take 10% of practice reps to, okay, Kevin, well, you're the only outside backer we got right now to taking like 80% of Leo reps. It hurts. It hurts a lot, but, you know, you do get better. But yeah, I think the coaches try to find ways to, you know, make sure the guys are getting better, but at the same time, making sure that, you know, they keep their legs underneath them.
And shout out to all the Leos during our career, because Bo had a spring ball from the pit of hell. Ben had a lot of real bad, just like strings of time where he had to take a lot of reps. Yeah. You got crushed right away, just thrown into the fire. Like, oh, yeah. Leo's had it rough throughout our career.
It's a tough spot, man.
Post Kirksey era was a little bit tough on us, man.
See, the thing is, like, you're out in space, so you got to run a lot. So you got guys pulling hamstrings, and you're also like in the box a lot, so you get those nicks and bruises, and you got to close on power, so you get concussed every now and then. You get everything, man.
I think watching you guys run into each other in the hole actually took a toll on me as well from the sideline.
Did you ever get chills when you saw some of the hits,
dude? It's like watching the UFC fight last night. By the way, did you watch that, Drake?
Oh, of course.
We'll talk about that later. Jesus Christ. But right now there's no fans, so you can hear every kick, every punch. In practice, when there's no Kinnick Stadium, the pads hit, the helmets hit, and it's like two cars running into each other. And I got to watch that a lot. And obviously it's not even in the same storybook as being a part of the situation. But when you watch that and you know it's coming and you're watching from the side and you see the two masses coming to impact, every time you kind of flinch, and it's just like, oh my God. Like,
what do you think, Mark?
I think that there are a lot of people on Twitter who look at the game and they, you know, some of the, how the rules have evolved and how the targeting and a lot of the things they call it, you know, making the game soft, blah, blah, blah. I think it's evolution, and people would really get a taste for that if they were able to watch, just do what Tyler just said. You watch a game from a sideline, you realize how fast it is. You realize how violent it is. You realize how there are basically car crashes going on out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that would take away a lot of that. And I think then people would realize that, you know, when they put targeting in, you know, we all don't agree with it. Maybe they still don't officiate it just perfectly correctly, but it's a good thing. And I don't see any ratcheting back of those types of things. I see the game being safer, but what Tyler said, watch the game from the side. If you can ever, fans out there, watch a game from the sideline on this level, do it, because you would not believe how fast it is.
Yeah, it was a good thing I had 15 minutes in between plays, because I had to prep myself for how fast it was going to be in my one punt rep. Especially special teams rep. Kevin, you know all about it. Special teams rep, it's like you widen the field and it's like a full. I mean, we get out in space on a punt or a kickoff, and you're running.
You never run harder than you do on special teams, ever.
Yeah, I would say a normal special teams rep is like twice as demanding as any like defensive rep. Because, you know, on a punt, you block, then you're trying to get away from the guy who's trying to block you, then chase the guy down, then tackle him. Versus, you know, when you're playing defense, it's okay, get off the block. Yeah, and plus it's like 10 minutes in between each rep, so you're you're never exactly fully relaxed, but you're
it's very weird.
But you can't stay, jacked to the tits tent like the entire game either. Otherwise, you're going to be off by the end of the game.
You do a special teams rep, you get really pumped up for that one rep, and it's –
yeah.
It's like, oh, we're just like a flash, and you're like –
right, yeah. It actually is a thing. Yeah, it actually is a thing. You have to manage, like, your time on the sideline pretty well. You have to be at a certain alertness level to go in.
The amount of hype
– I'm like, yeah.
The amount of hypeness that you have to get for a special teams rep, that's serious. Because, like, I played shield on kick return for a couple years. Oh. Got to have a certain, like, mental state to know what's about to hit you. I played shield and punt for a couple years. Got to have a certain mental state when they don't take the defense off the field. The defense is down 14 points and the nose tackle is pissed. Okay, like there's just certain things about special teams that you don't get in regular football that's like, well, here this goes.
Yeah, I don't envy being on the wedge on kickoff return. RIP to the wedge. Being on the other side of it hurt, and I can't imagine it felt any better on your side.
I think you brought up an interesting point that I never really realized about maybe why explaining why long snapping was more difficult than you think it is because when you're long snapper, like specialist is the ultimate mind game, right? So if you listen to anyone who knows what they're talking about, it's 90% mental, 10% physical. You can go do the rep. You've done it.
There's a lot of guys who can hit 50-yard field goals.
Right. You can go do it. And kickers and punters don't necessarily have to flip the switch inside the play. Like, right? So they go out there. They're super calm, super steady. Keith Duncan, take your steps. There's the snap. There's the hold. I kick it. It goes through. For me, I had to snap the ball. And it was all the same stuff as Keith. Like, cool. Breathe, calm, light touch on the ball. Put it on the hip. Now the technical part's over. And then I have to go from like super detailed kind of like technical mind game to just like full on like psycho animalistic. All right, now I'm just a body trying to go run into another body. And it was like I had to turn that on after the snap was gone. And I've never really thought about it that way.
And then you almost showed that you really were just a truly superb athlete, but you came up 2 yards short. It was hilarious, and I want to hear Mark talk about it.
I was shocked. The play, I saw it. As soon as I saw Tyler go out, I'm like, okay, this is funky. Something cool is going to happen here, and it did. And as somebody who has had those moments where you're just – you could see it. You could see it. You could see it. And then you just kind of – your legs get a little jelly and oof. What about – you know what? It's more epic that you didn't get the touchdown.
Right.
100%. 100%.
And so it's also incredible that a great play in Hawk history happened afterwards. So it was just Tyler given like an unselfish effort, which is kind of the story of a long snapper. So, you know, it was just kind of like the epitome of him. He's a short, smurfy little guy, and he shouldn't have been in the position he was, but he got himself there through hard work. Came up a little short, again, smurfy guy, but laid the red carpet down for a great play. So it's like he did his job through and through. Him and I don't share something in common that we both have touchdowns against Ohio State, but it's okay because he has a cool play.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Wash Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
Let me ask you this, you guys, and this, you guys know Nate, right? I mean, you guys were on the team with Nate Stanley.
We had a podcast with him. It was a great episode.
Let me ask you about this. You know, you could argue that he had a rough ride a little bit with fans.
100%.
And we ride for him hard on this podcast.
I understand. How do you guys feel like he was treated by us? And how would you guys feel having to be the man? That's a tough job. You know, when you guys had 66 yards total offense at Wisconsin, the first guy out there talking was Nate.
Man,
that is, you guys don't realize that's a hard deal.
I would.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of media who 66 yards total offense. And you want to ask, you know, everybody wants to ask a tough question. And then here's a sophomore quarterback who, you know, lost in his home state, beat Ohio State the week before, not great with the media to begin with. And he's the first guy out there stuck when it's he had a really long evolution with media and, yeah. Watching him mature through that Penn State 2018 was that just sucked for everybody, and bad. but I this year I as a senior I tried to back off him a little bit. I just tried to not going to write a ton on him because he is spinning enough plates. So then you get to write a story about Wirfs and all those other guys. But to me, Nate is a pretty good case study for how you survive this. Really,
Kevin, I felt really bad for Nate because. He was a very similar story to CJ where he didn't get like CJ was played a little bit early and like people loved him and they're like, oh man, this guy showed flashes. Like let's get CJ in. Nate was going to step in anyways because he's coming in after CJ, but like he had to follow up one of Iowa's favorite quarterbacks ever. Like the blonde bomber. He's the golden goat. This is the man. 12-0 CJ Beathard, and you got to follow that as a first year starter. Some things were a little bit tough, like when it was, I was in some plays where his sophomore year, he was just, his mind was spinning, you know, we were running down the clock too much. Maybe the calls were coming in a little bit late. He was taking too long to analyze. Like things were just not quite happening fast enough. But like, if you just go back and watch him from early in his career, till now, and you see the evolution of him and the way he manages games, and he controls everything. We may not be having a great offensive game, but it's not because Nate isn't in control of everything that's happening. Some physical mistakes happen. That happens with everybody out there. But just like his evolution, if people were mad about the way he was performing in 2017, like in some situations, sure, that's fine. But like in that game against Wisconsin, the run game didn't help him. Like there was times where we couldn't even hear the cadence there. It was so loud in there. We were getting so swallowed up that like nobody had a chance. So it wasn't just his fault. So he takes a lot of blame because he's in the spotlight, but his evolution was pretty impressive.
And to add on to your point, you know, he took the blame. Like this is the great thing about Nate is, you know, he understood that as the quarterback, you're the leader in the good times and the bad times. You're going to get all the praise, you're going to get all the shit when things aren't going good. And, you know, that Wisconsin game, pretty rough outing for the offense. It could have been really easy for him to just say, you know what, we didn't have a whole lot of time. Like, I was fucking running for my life back there. But, you know, he's the type of guy who said, no, we got to do better. It starts with me. So, I got to give him that credit. And he was awesome to play with for that. He was a tremendous leader. It was awesome seeing him grow up from his time as a freshman to – become the second greatest quarterback in Iowa history. But as to your question, as how is he treated by the media, I can't honestly say. I don't read a whole lot of what the media puts out there. You know, you see on Twitter, like the hot takes every now and then. I think people on Twitter are idiots. Us three are at the top of that category.
We're idiots. Very top. We're way up there.
I don't know. I think people are quick to judge.
I think he was treated – yeah, so I think he was treated worse by the obvious vocal, very small minority of the dumbass fans that Kevin was just talking about. Mm-hmm. Kevin smoked it on the head. I can't imagine – like, Kevin mentioned he got one or two interviews. Drake got a few interviews. I got the Polecat Day and a few other times, like, during camp where I would – do interviews and like
Nate, it's every day.
You're used to it. Like you're used to it. You're a big time Division I football player. Doesn't matter if you're Nate Stanley or Tyler Kluver, like 1 to 125 on the roster. In your high school days, you were probably the guy. So you probably got interviewed a lot. Like
you're in the media more than the average person. But man, even when you would get in, like, I would sweat when you guys came around with the microphones a little bit. Like, and Nate, as you said, not the best just naturally to go stand in front of guys. But man, what a guy to be the first one out there and just never put it on anyone else. But hey, we got to be better. Hey, I could be better. We could be better. We could prepare more. I don't know how he did it because I would have blamed somebody else, 100%.
The weight would have got too heavy for you.
That's human nature. That's you get in that spotlight, and I think it does speak to his character.
He's so, and like you said, he and Drake kind of talked about it, the evolution of him, and he's just, he did think about things a lot. Like he's a super cerebral guy. I mean, you saw the Wunderlich, which isn't obviously, I mean, that's just one thing, but he's so smart. And this is just kind of off topic, but I truly believe that if Nate Stanley finds the right kind of system, this is bad example, but Tom Brady's a 6th round pick, yada, yada. Wasn't, you know, the best quarterback in college or anything. He comes in, if you find the right system and he understands what he's doing and he gets the right guys around him, I think he could be a successful starter in the NFL, even though, you know, he wasn't just like, you know, he wasn't Justin Herbert or he wasn't Tua or he wasn't all these guys that are top of the draft class. He said in our interview when he came on here, he's like, I'm just trying to be like the Daniel Jones. Like, I just want to go under radar, get an opportunity, and then go make things happen once I get the chance. He's a super interesting case study, like you said. Just he had a crazy career, and we're so happy for him and everything. But
you contrast that with Josie. I mean, you've had Josie on too. Josie, when he came out and talked to us, it was usually good things because Josie was, you know, he was an ass kicker. There were very few misplays.
He was okay, yeah.
He was the hometown hero. He was the all-Iowa, all-American.
Is he on your Rushmore, Mark?
Yeah, you know what? One of the best to walk in the locker room, I think. And totally unexpected. You know, I thought, okay, well, here's this four-sport kid. He'll probably end up being a safety maybe. He'll probably have a special teams type career, right? I mean, what you guys had. But no, I mean, he's goddamn all-American.
Outlaw.
His portraits up in the where you guys eat, which is a big deal in my mind.
Huge. He was on Kinnick, man.
But he had to look at his ugly mug very different. All year long. When he first started talking to us, it was like interviewing Frankenstein a little bit. I mean,
he's definitely that ugly.
He did not want to do it. He did not, and he was not good at it. But you know, you got to know him a little bit. Seriously, you got to know him. Actually, know him a little bit, and he got to know you, and he got to be more comfortable with you. And all of a sudden, the stories got better. Mm-hmm. Stories got a little deeper, telling the story about when his uncle shot some rabid dog that he wanted to fight or bite or something. You know, that stuff starts to come out once you get a little bit comfortable. And so I would compare, you know, maybe that's a great point, you guys. Maybe Josie being from here, maybe that kind of helped him a little bit when things got ugly, you know, because Penn State happened under his watch. 41-14.
Yeah.
And I think everybody wanted to get the hell out of that stadium that night. I don't think anybody gave a shit about what you guys had to say after that game. Mm-hmm. I don't think you guys did either.
No, that was like that was probably one of the most miserable games that we ever played in. We talked about it before. Our flight was delayed. We didn't get back to Iowa City until like 1:30 in the morning. It was awful. But yeah, I mean, is there that's funny you say that, you know, you get to see the you know, how guys develop, you know, not just as a football player, but, you know, kind of their personality with the media and how they kind of open up. Is there anyone else that kind of sticks out to you in your time as someone who was like kind of timid or shy and kind of grew in themselves as they went throughout their career?
I don't know how you guys know how well you guys know Akram, but Akram was a guy who, you know, he'd say something goofy, he'd smile, and that'd be the end of the interview. Yeah. And then he would start telling – oh, yes. And then he'd start telling stories, and he'd start talking about Jersey. And my goodness, I'd sit and listen to those all day. So he really grew.
Jersey, like, man.
What's that?
We had to hear a lot about
from Jersey. From Jersey, man. Back in Jersey, man.
Easy money. I was going to ask – I'm guessing that there is – when you hammer a football team together with kids from Marshalltown to Muscatine with a kid from Newark, I imagine the cultural literacy that goes up with that is got to be amazing.
We went to Newark.
Oh,
you did? We went to Newark. And when we played Rutgers, we stayed in Newark or very, very, very close.
It was close. Yeah.
And the food was dog shit, okay? The food at the hotel was dog shit. And the whole table, we sat as the running back table.
You blamed it on Akram.
No. We the whole running back table sat together. Akram was getting – he was telling us how great this food was. He was like, oh, man, this is the best, blah, blah, blah. Everybody in the running back room was like, Akram, this is ass. I would rather eat my dog's food. Like, this steak tastes like – literally, they cut it from the guy's colon. Like, get me out of Newark, dude. And the whole time I was in New Jersey, I just knew how big of a liar Akram was because that place sucked my balls.
Wow.
Home is home for
everybody. Didn't really answer your question, Mark, but thanks for that.
Home is home for everybody, though, you know?
Yeah, it's true. He seemed to enjoy it, but I think Iowa City is better than Newark.
Iowa City food scene, I would not argue against it at all.
Yeah. No, but to your point, it is really interesting, you know, how guys from very different walks of life kind of come into a locker room and, you know, some guys are able to mesh and mingle and, like, create great friendships. Some guys it's tough, you know, and they kind of just stick with the guys who kind of grew up the same way like them. And
who are some of the guys who cut through that stuff? Who are some of the guys who kind of tie things together during your time anyway? I'm thinking guys who a guy like CJ, you know, CJ taking half the team down to Nashville. Bo Bauer was down there playing guitar. I saw that picture. Jordan Lomax. But there, I think every one of these teams needs a guy who can kind of bring everybody together in a locker room. I don't know, was there that guy for you guys?
Yeah, so I mean, I would say Jordan Lomax is probably my first guy that comes to mind, in my opinion. You know, he was a guy that was
liaison.
What's that?
The cultural liaison.
I mean, yeah, he was just cool with everyone, you know, mm-hmm. And he would invite guys from, you know, like, you know, the white walk-on DBs to, you know, the guys who grew up in, you know, downtown Chicago, you know, and we'd all be hanging out together and stuff like that, you know. And that was part of what was really great about that 2015 team. We've talked about it before, is that was the closest team that we ever had.
Yeah.
And when guys like each other, it's easy, a lot easier to go out and practice together.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that, all that stuff just, it adds up. And That season was very special for a lot of different reasons, you know, and besides the fact that, you know, we did run the table and, you know, and a lot of that speaks to the leadership of that team, you know, and Drew Ott was another guy too. Drew Ott's from fucking middle of nowhere, Nebraska.
I was going to say Drew.
Yeah. And, you know, he was a guy that could, you know, talk with Jaleel and talk shit.
And I was about to say Jaleel because of Drew. Gosh, damn it, Kevin, shut up.
Y'all can chime in, but I mean,
I remember,
you know, those guys are absolutely essential to a locker room.
I remember asking Jaleel if he knew who Keith was after the Michigan game. He said he did, and he said, "Look, he would buy him a burger."
Oh yeah, and it's funny because like we were talking about this, I think on the Paulsons episode when they're showing like Jaleel how a cow gets born or something crazy like that.
How it gets artificially inseminated.
That's right. Yeah. You know, it's just funny, man. Cause you got guys from inner cities, you got guys from the suburbs, you got guys from way out in the middle of nowhere, and you get to learn a lot about, you know, a different way of life.
I think, yeah. So this, I don't know where this came, but thoughts just went popping off in my head, and I'm going to try to put it into words, which I'm not usually good at. So at a place like Iowa, specifically, it's, and I would say this is college football in general. But you obviously have these two different sides. I would say mostly in the Big Ten, this is very true. You're bringing together Midwestern, you know, farm white kids with a lot of African-American inner city. Like, there's these two just almost complete opposite. Like, it just is what it is. You have to call a spade, right? And so, like, these two kids, they're not the same in any way. Now, obviously – not every kid on a 120 person roster fit into white farm kid or black inner city kid. There's plenty of in-betweens, right? But it's what makes Iowa such a special place and Northwestern, Wisconsin, it's all these places. And I think it's why the Big Ten is special too, is I think, without naming names, I think Jaleel, Lomax, and Ott are really, really good examples from that one team. But it's the guys who – it's the prototype guy who – it doesn't matter if he's the inner city kid or the farm kid or just a town kid from Iowa, whatever, wherever he's from. It's the guys who are so open early on to accepting and learning from Doyle and the coaching staff how to just ultimately buy into the program and what they preach. Because it's almost, we've talked about it before, there's this proven like book that's just unwritten. It's like, hey, if you go to Iowa, if you just listen to what they tell you and you do your best, you will succeed. It just will happen. That's not the case everywhere else. Like, if you listen to what Doyle tells you to do, you will be successful. It's he has the magic pill. And so the guys who are willing at a young age to buy into that, but then also wait their time until it's the perfect moment, and they're now the guy in the spot to lead the team. And then, of course, you know, a little bit of just natural charisma, natural leadership ability plays into it as well. But those are the guys who really cross everyone over. And I think that the 15 team is a extreme representation of that, where, you know, Kevin and Drake will echo this. It was this feeling of everyone talks to everyone. There's no
corner. It was a brotherhood for sure.
There's no corner of the locker room that doesn't converse and hang out with another corner of the locker room. There isn't a grade level that kind of just ignores a younger grade level or an upper grade level. There was all this crossing over, and it's extremely tough. People wonder why you can't go 12-0 every year. It's because the myriad of factors that play into a dynamic like that on a football team, everything has to just kind of be perfect. And everything was just perfect that year. And that's a good example of how that happened.
Clifford, do you remember the conversation that we had in the old complex? We were walking up the stairs in 2014. I think it was probably prior to a lift. So it's 2014, old complex. We're discussing the schedule of the upcoming season and how Michigan was getting talked about all over the place about how great they were going to be.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, they're predicting it'll be 12-0, blah, blah. And I said, well, they got to come here and beat us first. And you're like, yeah, they do. Boy, they couldn't get that sumbitch done.
They couldn't get it done, man. They couldn't get it done. That's a whole nother – I don't know. I think the root of a lot of this is Doyle as well. A lot of things come back to Coach Doyle in the Iowa program. That man is truly perfect in his role. There's never been a person that was supposed to do what they're doing more than him. And I was super fortunate to have him.
I thought it was really great what he said about the COVID right now. You know, it's gonna separate the weak from the strong really quickly.
And he called it a competition, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And I love that. That's exactly, you know, people might not want to hear that right now with, you know, death out there and what all not, but football is going to be back, and Iowa's going to be on the hook for wins. You know, mm-hmm. And so you need somebody out there pressing those buttons. And can you imagine the setting up an entire college football team, making sure they're all set up with reasonable weights and stuff. Like, can you imagine just that undertaking? That makes me tired just thinking about it.
I've gotten to witness a little bit of it firsthand just because,
brother,
you know, yeah. What they've sent out. I've looked at the material, and it's, you know, it's Doyle's got a great template. You know, they didn't have to start from scratch, completely, but you know, they made it a home program, and they made it so that it's doable. For example, I'm not going to give out any secrets, but right. I was looking at my brother's lift card today, and they were supposed to do a two 20 meter or 20 yard sprints with a sled, right? But not everybody has a sled, so the alternatives were wear a weight vest or something that you can, like, you know, a weighted backpack, or find a slight incline and sprint up the incline. And like just little things like that and all of, you know, and that's just one movement. That's just a resisted sled sprint. You know, there's hundreds of movements that they have to account for and program in.
This is a tragedy for these players though, because like part of what was why I was able to transform my body into the way that I was and all of us is because the environment plays so much into it. Like no matter how hard you think you're pushing yourself, if you don't actually have your teammates around you to like see, okay, this guy just outdid me. I can't let that happen. I'm worried about everybody's like personal motivation.
Yeah. I mean, like Dole talked, like, you know, he mentioned it. Like, it's a competition. This is going to put to test, you know, who has the strongest culture, whose guys are willing to go out and work on their own, no one watching. I mean, it'd be very easy to put that card in the trash and like, okay, I'll see you whenever whenever the team gets back together. But yeah, it's a competition among the staffs of, hey, how well can we do meetings online? I know we didn't have spring ball, but hey, we still have to install all these plays, all these defenses, all these packages. It's a competition among strength tasks. Like, hey, we got guys going home with very wide varieties of equipment. How can we get them best prepared once football is back? And it's going to be fascinating to see, because this is the biggest grenade thrown into an off season in college football history.
DeMarco had a great tweet about it.
DeMarco's the GOAT.
He tweeted something about, you know, if you're a strength coach or a strength staff right now and you're worried about your guys, you know, being able to have the right things or do the right things, you're not a very good strength coach or strength staff, because part of your job as that kind of component in conjunction with the coaching staff, the position coaches, is to prepare your guys for life and, you know, kind of set them up. And KF and Doyle talk about this all the time, making great men, you know, creating great people. And if you have done that well in your program, then you don't have to worry in a time like this about if your guys are doing the right thing or if they're motivated to be getting work done. They'll be motivated and they'll be doing the right stuff. And so,
right. I mean, your title's a coach, meaning you're there to teach guys and, you know, correct them. You're not an enforcer. You're not making sure that they do right. And that is not what you're being paid to do.
Right.
And if that's what you have to do as a program, then your program needs some cultural adjustment.
You recruited the wrong guys.
100%. And often you'll see those guys, you know, a lot of guys, a huge question, especially in the media, I think, Mark, this is something that a lot of you guys wonder, because you don't get the whole inside story, the day-to-day, who's in the doghouse, who isn't. Those guys who kind of don't fit that mold, you know, the guys who in this kind of situation would go home and they'd sit on their ass for 3 months and they'll come back and they'll be ready. I'll be ready, you know.
Figured that pretty fast.
They're not in the black and gold anymore. They're just one way or another, they end up not in the uniform. And then the fans wonder, oh, he was so promising. He was such a good recruit. He was supposed to be this guy. Yeah, he might be great at football, but it, you know, football's what, maybe half of the equation, not even. So I think that's kind of a little insight on why some guys just don't work out.
I try to come in a little light when it comes to recruiting. I don't want to tell a kid's life story. I don't want to try to make promises for a kid that he has no control over of fulfilling for a fan. So I try to just come in light. And then like Tristan, you know, when he's worth a big story, then tell that story. You know,
Do you think Tristan was a slam dunk coming in? Because when I saw him in person, I thought he was the most layup first rounder of all time. Not that he didn't have to work hard for it, but just what he had to work from, the clay that God gave him to sculpt was different than the clay that I have.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't even think I got any clay.
I got sand. But but he, you know what? Watching him grow up here, watching him show up on the news when he's a sophomore, Sable doing a big story, Channel 9 doing a big story on him. So I kind of sat back and I wanted to tell his story when it was really time, when he was ready to make that big, you know, whole season of anticipation. You know, when you're a guy with his clay, and this is going to piss people off, but you got to go to the NFL when you have to go to the NFL. And I kind of figured it would happen this year for Tristan, if I'm being honest. And I think
this probably absolutely the right decision for him is too.
I think he probably had that in the back of his mind going into this year. Mm-hmm. There's a time to tell a story like that, in my opinion, when a guy like Tristan's ready to tell it. AJ, I think Mike Loss went down and did AJ, and when those guys are, you know, when they're on the precipice of something big, and I think they both were this year, and I think the draft proved that out. I just think there's time and place to put a kid in a pedestal like that, you know, because that's, like I said, I don't want to make promises for kids that I don't want to be in the business of doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a pretty good motto to live by.
What do you think about the last month or so of recruiting for Iowa? It's been insane, right?
It's insane. And, man, I don't know what he's doing, but whatever Tyler Barnes is doing, keep doing it.
You know what? They must be fucking giving guys cars now. Son of a bitch.
I don't know, man. I saw Tyler Barnes at the golf course the other day. I think he's just tweeting, man, and it's just working.
Yeah,
I don't think he's actually doing a whole lot. I think he's tweeting, boom.
An organization, and I think this staff is telling Iowa's story and message more consistently than maybe the last staff or the guys that, who left. And I think Kelton's fantastic. I think Derek Foster's been a great recruiter. Tim Polisek, sneaky great recruiter, and
Tim Polisek is one of the greatest human beings. Dude.
If Tim Polisek came and sat in my living room and told me that we were going to go murder somebody, I would commit to that.
He's from Wisconsin, so there's a 50-50 chance that there's murder involved.
Yeah.
Let me tell you a Polisek story quick. The first time I ever met him, it was shortly after I broke my leg. It was during spring ball. It was during skills and drills pre-spring ball. I had a sling on from shoulder surgery, and I had a boot on from my leg. And that's the first time I'm meeting this guy. And then a couple months later, after he had seen me like all beat up, I was walking around the complex fine, but I wasn't practicing. And Polisek, he didn't see me break my leg or anything. So he doesn't know what the issue really is, or maybe he's just being funny or whatever. He's like, Drake, the fuck you coming back? Can't help the team in the tub.
Tell you what you need to hear. Coaches tell you what you need to hear, right?
And, hey, I needed to hear it, and he got my ass motivated. Not that I wasn't motivated already, but it was like, all right, Polisek, you want to play hardball, dickhead? I'm coming back.
That's fantastic. Well, I don't want to take up too much more time. I want to get to anything that you may have, Mark, that you want to hit on before we go. You are welcome anytime on the podcast.
I appreciate it.
I think it's fun to have a perspective like you.
Yeah, old. You mean old, right?
Wise.
There you go.
How many years have you been doing it?
I covered every Kirk Ferentz game except for the one last fall where my daughter got married, Middle Tennessee State, and then the Northern Illinois game, the one game they won in 1999. I was covering Iowa State still for that one. I was in Vegas. I missed it. So, yeah, 22 years for Kirk. That's what is going on for me, at least with the Gazette. And before that, I covered Iowa home games for the Telegraph Herald in Dubuque, and that was Timmy Dwight day. So, yeah, I'm pretty old.
He was decent.
He was fun to watch. And Tavian was fun to watch. And that team, that 1997 team, I think they ended up losing to Arizona State in the Sun Bowl. It was kind of a disappointing year. But that team, the top 22 players were freaking amazing. Just a team that just didn't have the depth to get double-digit wins. And you know what? I think one thing during my time doing this, I think fans – you know, I look at Nebraska fans and I look at their expectations. I look at Iowa fans and I look at their expectations. And I think Iowa fans are some of the most realistic ones out there. I think people realize that 8 wins for this program is probably about average. And
we've talked about the 8 win mark at Nottingham on this podcast and how important it actually is and how
I agree
difficult it is against the field.
Yeah, against the field and for what Iowa is and what Iowa can be. I mean, 8 wins next year. You put 8 wins on the table right now for next year's schedule.
I'm taking it.
That's a hell of a season. That's probably maybe one of Kirk's best coaching jobs. I mean, Ohio State and Penn State have buys next year going into Iowa. and I was on the road for both of them back to back. Holy shit.
New QB. Yeah. It's going to be tough here. But
hey. What are your thoughts on Petras?
You know what? I didn't know him very well. I had not met him. And then out of the San Diego Zoo, he's a huge Tyler Childers fan. And I think I tweeted about it or talked to him about it or something. And he comes up to me and starts talking about Tyler Childers. I didn't know him very well. And I think that's a great start. I think that's kind of the C.J. Beathard sort of starter kit. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you this. With Spencer, you're going to get a lot more C.J. than you're going to get Nate.
I kind of get that feeling.
I have a couple of the guys on like social media and Snapchat still, and Spencer's a character on some of those. He's really funny. He plays the guitar. He'll dance. I think at the Holiday Bowl at one of the things he was like doing something at one of the events like up on stage. If I can remember right. So he's not as shy as Nate. I supposedly he's got the same kind of cannon on his arm. I never really watched him because he was – did he come in right when we were
– He came in the spring after we left.
While we were training for Pro Day.
We were training for Pro Day.
We never really got to see him at all. But I think he's going to be just fine. Every time it seems that Iowa has like, oh, how are we going to replace this guy? It seems like next man in always happens. So.
Yep. I'm more worried about for next year. I'm more worried about like who the third running back is going to be. Cause I think, you know, this is the type of schedule that you might go through a few running backs.
Yeah.
And I love Tyler, but last year, you know, sometimes he got up slow. I mean, he's not a huge kid. And so I worry about a running game fitting with helping Spencer out that way. And I just look at Iowa's next year and you tweeted it perfectly. Tyler, when you tweeted about I'm glad AJ Epenesa's on my team. You're gonna miss that guy next year. To me,
and the crackhead Dave Chappelle got any more of them Epenesas?
That was one of my better tweets.
I worry about defensive line next year, but I look at a guy like Joe Evans, and I think, you know what? Who knows? You know, maybe Joe Evans could be like Nate Meyer was in 2015.
Would love that.
Nate Meyer was a guy who totally. Got a ton of respect for him. He really, I mean, 245-pound defensive end in the Big Ten.
He was a tough-nosed grinder.
Just had a motor on him, though.
Nate Meyer is an absolute – Nate, his nickname should be the Anomaly. He was a go guy. Mm-hmm. Anything else, guys?
I just got one question for you is, you know, some people on Twitter are, you know, kind of – sometimes get upset with KF, you know, giving political answers, maybe not giving a whole lot of insight. Is there any kind of feeling that in the media, you know, we kind of teach our guys to, you know, say less is saying more, you know, and for the most part they listen, you know, you get Drake saying body bags every now and then, but do you ever wish like there is a lifted veil of the program than there is, or do you feel pretty content with the amount of, you know, access you guys get to the program?
I'd like one more day of interviews would be great, but I don't begrudge KF that anymore. You guys are they're in the business of building you guys into men, into winning games. And we should be very low on the priority ladder when it comes to that. I would like to just tell more stories about what's going on. Like, it'd be cool to be able to get a day, you know, maybe a day a week with Doyle, maybe not Doyle so much in the winter, but with guys, I mean, I think that's a big part of the program is that the winter stuff you guys do and the camaraderie that goes on.
That'd be cool.
Tristan doing that lift, the 450-pound hang clean, I would love to bite into that energy. And you know what? Frankly, I think college football might be leaving a little money on the table because I think people would watch the hell out of that.
Oh, I have – all the thoughts about off-season documentaries and looks into the program and all that. I wish it would happen bad.
You gotta be careful what you wish for because Mike Hall got himself an interview with Doyle and he got cooked.
He got smoked.
He got
smoked. Well, that's because if you enter the arena with Doyle, you come out the loser. You lose. Yeah.
I think if I got in the weight room right now, I'd lose an organ pretty quickly. Slide right out of me.
I'm
an Olympical warrior at this point at 53. It's
like as long as you get the heart rate up.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just stay active and And for however many
fasting stuff, I'm curious about it, but I like eating too much.
You got to hit up Tyler-Kluver@live.com.
There you go.
I love the plug. I love it. You know what, Mark? I could talk all day about it, but I'm not going to because these guys will just.
That's cool. So, That's cool.
I hope as fans, you guys enjoyed listening to this episode. This probably won't be the last time we have Mark on because, as you can tell, we could talk for a long time about a lot of things. So,
you bet.
Loved having you on. Thanks for the opportunity for us to exploit you for content, and you know that's really the game we're in now.
Hey, yeah, that's what it's play, right?
Yeah, it's all about that.
I use you guys, you use me, it's all good.
Love it. Yeah. Love it. That's it for the Walk-Ons, episode 117. We will be back.
This one's titled Friends with Benefits.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, jeez.
Peace out.
I'm MJ Acosta Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.